Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the show. This is the Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. I'm your host, pop art painter Jamie Rocks, and this is the big show. You found it. Sure, I'm glad you did. Very, very cool. I am super excited for today's episode. We were originally going to do this before, and then I got sick and everything. We had to move a bunch of shows, but I'm glad in a way that that happened because, you know, I just really wanted to waste our guest time. Now, I'm kidding. I totally did not want to do that. But I was able to rewatch the show a second time, the movie a second time, and it's even better the second time. We've got a fantastic, he co-wrote this, directed it, he stars in it. Mr. Brett Latta is on with us today, and the name of the new
you
movie.
You got it, man. Most people get it wrong the first time, but you got it.
It's the Andy Baker tape. This is a cool film, man. Brett, this is an awesome film. I loved it.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we had so much fun doing this, and I'm just glad that now it's finally out there and the world can kind of see what we created in 2020.
That's amazing. And that's, for those who don't know, there was a little thing happening in 2020, the global pandemic. While the rest of us were starting organic gardens in our backyard and baking sourdough bread, Brett knocked it out of the park. Got some friends together and
we tried. You know, I got a grant through Screen Actors Guild right at the top of the pandemic. I just came off of a short film that won the Academy Award. I applied for this grant. Oh. I got it, and I bought a camera. So for the first 3 months of the pandemic, all I did was learn how to shoot. I was, you know, producing some shorts with my girlfriend, who was my neighbor in New York. We spent 3 months in kind of like a film school boot camp. And then I teamed up with Dustin, and we wrote the full feature script for the Andy Baker tape.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And you were in New York at the time. Did you guys film this? I know it takes place in New Jersey. I don't know if it was filmed there. But this was an East Coast production, right?
It was, yeah. We mostly shot. I mean, Dustin and I, who I co-wrote, who plays Andy Baker in the film, we're both from the Jersey Shore. I grew up in a small town, Point Pleasant. He's from Freehold. And during the pandemic, I was in New York up until June of 2020. I finally left. I rented a small beach house at the Jersey Shore. There was nothing going on in the city. And I spent, I'd say, you know, 15 months on and off in New Jersey, you know, going back and forth. I was touring the film. But we shot, for the most part, all around the Jersey Shore. We went down to Atlantic City. The only scenes not shot in New Jersey, if anyone watched the film, are at the top of the film when we're in the cabins in Pennsylvania. That's in the far part of Pennsylvania.
I gotcha. Well, you know, spending the pandemic doing your passion in a beach house could be worse, my friend. Could be worse. No, neither.
You know, I agree. I you know, it certainly didn't come without its costs. And the rest of my career was kind of put on hold. But I tried to do whatever I could to make the best of that time that was given to me. And in a way, it opened up kind of new outlets. You know, I spent the last 10 years working as an actor out of New York, and you get so busy where you're running to auditions, you're running to jobs, you're trying to make this work, you're trying to work side jobs, and you don't really have the time to sit down and just write and type and get things kind of ironed out. This gave me that freedom to just sit down and devote myself to a project that I was controlling, that I wasn't being told by a studio, you know, to go work on. This was just me. And it was my distraction from the slowness of the pandemic, and it kept me artistically active.
That's awesome. You know, that's something I've known a few people. I went to school in Boston, so, you know, I was down in New York at least once a month down in the city, just, you know, because that's where everything's happening, man. But I knew a couple of people doing the trying to get into break into the acting gig and a couple of stand-ups and whatnot. But, you know, something that people don't realize outside of the business, just, you know, when you're at home and you click on the TV and you watch a show and it's great and all this mess. But what really the actor and actresses that do that work, it's very hard. You know, there's a trope that, oh, everybody's a waiter when they're, you know, an aspiring actor and this. And that. It's hard to have a regular job with a schedule and stuff like that when you got to run all the time. So, I mean, you could get a call and say, we need to see you in 3 hours, or we need to see you tomorrow, you know, or.
Absolutely.
I mean, what a nightmare.
It's always been one of the struggles when you're first starting off, and even now. You always kind of have to work flexible jobs and things that you can drop at the blink of a moment. I was always fortunate that I was able to kind of get into side hustles with tons of other actors. So if I needed to bail out for an audition, or if I booked a job for a few months and I was out of town, I could get coverage. I will say I had this conversation with a friend now who started off as an actress who's now an executive at Amazon. And that's the one thing that they don't teach you in drama school is kind of how to navigate when you're first starting off. You know, New York is the most expensive. It's like the second most expensive city in the United States. You're paying extreme rent. You're paying extreme bills. Everything's more expensive. It's how to keep yourself afloat and how to keep going. And for the most part, you know, actors were – when we're working these side gigs, unless we have – you know, a great trust fund or someone kind of sponsoring us, we're taking jobs that we're underemployed in, where we're not really making the money that we can, because we have to take things that we can bail out at any second because we get a job. That is just the nature of this beast. And you have to stay. I think the statistic is at any given time, it's 95% of actors are unemployed. So no matter who you are, at some point you're going to be faced with bills you have to pay, and you have to find things that are lucrative that can keep you afloat. And that is just as energy draining as it is of trying to run to every audition, try to get things going, try to pick things up. It really is life Django. That's the best way I can put it. Of really trying to navigate your life and arrange your life in a way where you don't have distractions to what's really important to you.
Absolutely. I was just talking to a friend of mine. I have a lot of friends in the I tell people I'm an old retired club rat. I used to go to a lot of nightclubs. Yeah. I'm a painter for trade. That's what I do. I paint paintings, and that's who I used to sell a lot when I lived out in Southern California. That's you know, where people who bought paintings hung out. So that's why I was hanging out.
Yeah,
a lot of nightclubs. I was wolfing around. I was single, you know. World different under those circumstances. Anyhow, I know a lot of DJs, and when the pandemic happened, one of the crazy things is right before it happened, there's got to be at least 6 or 7 people, guys and gals I knew, who got these giant, great money residency jobs in Vegas and different places.
Wow.
And, you know, they had about 2 months of really big money coming in. And they weren't used to it. And, you know, cars were bought. Houses were rented. You know, all kinds, you know, all the trappings of when you first get a little bit of money.
Sure,
and
sure.
Then the pandemic happened and the nightclub business shut down. You know, you and the acting, same thing, you know, same thing. I remember watching when it first happened, I was watching, I think it was The Blacklist, and they had to animate half the show because everybody couldn't work, you know, because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same thing happened. And those cars, you know, the notes still were due. Rent still had to be paid, you know, I mean.
Yeah.
And once you take that influx out, oh, things got tight, you know. Nobody had prepared.
It's always this fine line, because you spend so much time. You know, I spent years in drama school. I spent years when I was first out of college. All I did was train with coaches in New York, and I worked with people. And it wasn't until I was about 25 or 26 that I really tried to buckle down and figure out my finances and also arrange my life in a way that was really suitable, that I could find longevity, you know, through the ebbs and valleys of this career. You know, when I first moved to New York, I got my SAG card when I was 22. I was right out of school. I hardly had any cash. I got a brand new apartment in New York, and then I had to furnish it. So this was my first credit card. I was $10,000 in debt immediately, and this was post-graduating college. My SAG, you know, when you get your SAG card, it's $3,000. I paid a $3,500 broker fee for the apartment, and then I went to IKEA, and I put $3,000 of furniture on a credit card. Now, I lived with that debt for about a year and a half, and then luckily I booked a nice film job that I shot for 3 months that I was able to pay all that off.
Knock that out.
Now, I know what that stress feels like to have that, and I know what the relief is to get that away. So after that, I started working with a financial manager just to tuck things in and to give myself the peace of mind and the safety net that's needed to sustain a career in this business.
Absolutely. And you're an actor. You got to keep your hair. You got to, you know, you can't be.
That's the truth. That's what no one tells you. You know, haircuts at good salons in New York are $90. You know, like I grew up at the Jersey Shore, where I spent $15 on haircuts growing up. But it's all these little extra expenses, and luckily for the most part, you can do a lot of those as tax write-offs. Some of that's changed, but you know, it's true. It's like I was a competitive swimmer for years. My hair is a little bit chlorine damaged. If I don't take care of it, it poofs out like a fro. So I go to these better salons to get my hair taken care of, and it's expensive. And my friends at home look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, hey, that's part of my calling card. It's part of the image that I have.
Yeah, that's part of the job. Absolutely. I remember my wife manages. We have more product and bottles of stuff in our house, then she manages a makeup place, one of these, a big makeup store. And so she's into all that. She's an esthetician and she knows all this stuff. When we first got together, I'll never forget, I was washing my face with lava soap because I could get it at the dollar store and it got paint off. Yeah. And I didn't, you know, I didn't think any pores. What the hell is a pore? I don't even know, you know. I knew I was poor.
Yeah.
And she just was. I remember she just went in and threw everything away. She's like, "No, no,
yeah.
you're an idiot. This is what you got to do, man. You're gonna look 95 when you're, you know, 40. What's wrong with you?" And
But I
my gig is a little easier because I don't have to be in the camera. You got to look like a movie star, you know. So you got to eat right. You got to sleep. You got to, you know.
It's all part of the stuff that goes into it. And I was a competitive swimmer for years. So when it comes to trying to take care of my body and nutrition, that's something that comes naturally. You know, it's certainly an hour and a half sacrifice a day to go to the gym, but it's kind of part of what you sign
what
up
is,
for.
Yeah.
You know, that's just that. But, you know, I remember even, you know, my big splurge was when I was able to finally get Kiehl's products. I really like Kiehl's, and that's like the facial moisturizer stuff that I use. And, you know, it's not anything that's crazy expensive, but, you know, even like a bottle of Kiehl's is $40. But it's the best stuff that I use, you know, and it's just things, you know, I learned from these makeup artists on set. You know, I just had a makeup artist who was like, you got to try emu oil. So I said, okay, I guess emu oil has the same fat lipids that our body has, so it really kind of moisturizes your skin in a good way. So they sent me a bottle of emu oil, and I'm using that before I go to bed. And I think it actually really does help and clean. But even a bottle of that, is, you know, for a 3-ounce bottle is like $60. And it's stuff that it's crazy. And the high school version of me would have been like, what are you doing? But it is. True. I sometimes have a camera in my face that's 3 inches away. So, you know, it's going to pick up every crevice, every pore, every blemish, and you have to kind of combat that.
Absolutely. And every month they're coming out with better TVs, you know. I watched the other day, was at my in-laws, and my in-laws are kind of well-to-do, and they have, you know, fancy TVs and stuff, and I don't know, we walked through the room and there was one of the Indiana Jones movies, the one with Sean Connery, and they're in the plane, you know, and it looked terrible. It looked terrible on the screen because that was when that was filmed, it wasn't filmed for a 4K, whatever it is, TV, you know what I mean? It looked like it was on stage. I was like, what am I watching, a theatrical production? But yeah, you know, you got to take all that. Well, the cool thing is, you know, it's like anything. It's like, I remember when I first, when I got out to California, I made a little bit of money and I got an old Jag. I thought I was cool. Like, oh man, I'm driving a Jaguar, man. I felt like a Bond villain. And, you had to put premium gas in it. It was a fancy car. You couldn't put 87 octane in it. It wouldn't run. You know? Same thing with you. You know, you can't put a big pizza in there. Maybe once in a while, but not every day. Can't be going to Taco Bell.
No, I give myself one day where I eat whatever I want. You know, you can't. I've learned that you can't live like a gerbil on a wheel. You know, because that's just not sustainable. So usually one day of the week, I do a major pig out day where it's like pancakes, donuts. I'll go to In-N-Out sometimes. I'll get, you know, a 4x4 and, you know, some – because I'm in L.A. right now. I get some
get that animal style. Yeah, totally.
Oh, get a milkshake. And, you know, when I was in New York, the treat would be pizza. You know, I used to go to all the good pizza shops around the city. It was like a once a week thing. So we go to, you know, DeFara is one of the legendary pizza places in Brooklyn. I go out to DeFara. I go to John Fleek, or I would just down some stuff like that. And you have to do that, because if you're just eating brown rice, chicken, and broccoli, you're going to go crazy, you know. And the guys that are on those bodybuilding competition diets, you know, they're really only doing that, too, when they're in competition season. You know, on the off season, they're eating whatever they can to bulk up and just put on the size. So, you know, it comes and goes when I have to be.
It's different, too, when somebody's hanging a big check in front of you. You know, oh, we need you to be this weight for this role. Okay, paying me? I can eat an apple. Not a problem. you know, but it's, well, you know, you look great. You've been in all kinds of, I took a look at your IMDb page before, and you got all kinds of stuff. Now, with this one, not only were you acting, though, with the Andy Baker tape, you slid it, well, you know, you co-wrote it, and then you slid into the director's chair. Was this your first, I can't remember, I remember all your acting stuff, including, like, Law & Order and all kinds of cool stuff. You were on Alpha. Was this one of your first directing debuts, or had you done that a couple times before?
No, this really was my first major directing project. You know, I directed a couple shorts leading up to this, and they were very low budget, just putting things up. And this was the first time that I really sat down and I helmed the project on my own. I did work as a producer in the past, and I have produced feature films, and I worked as a story treatment editor. So I had an understanding of what goes into the process, but this really was the first time that I sat down and I helmed a project of my own.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages. Listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us, www.jamierocks.us.
Metal Babe Mayhem is more than just an online store, it's a destination. MetalBabeMayhem.com carries over 150 rock and roll products, including clothing, jewelry, and accessories. Metal Babe Mayhem also offers shrine clothing and alchemy gothic jewelry. In addition, Metal Babe Mayhem founder Allison Metal Babe Cohen is a rock and roll journalist who supports local and national artists with rockin' reviews, interviews, playlists, networking, and more. Metal Babe Mayhem is taking over the world, one shirt at a time.
My Love Shack Apothecary online shop has everything you need to build a special gift for yourself or someone who needs a little pampering. I hand make all of the products in small batches using only plant-based ingredients and therapeutic-grade essential oils. Whether you choose one of my curated sets or want to build a custom gift set, My Love Shack Apothecary has everything you need to send a little sunshine to someone today. Please visit us online at www.loveshackapothecary.com. That's www.loveshackapothecary.com, as well as online on Instagram and Facebook. Links are in our website.
Support for this podcast comes from the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, ranked one of the top cancer centers in the nation for the last 27 years. The doctors at MD Anderson treat more rare cancers in a single day than many physicians see in a lifetime, and treatment plans are tailored to an individual patient's needs, allowing more comprehensive and thorough care. To become a patient, please visit MakingCancerHistory.com.
Aloha. If you have stress in your life or even anxiety and panic, I want to invite you to the Anxiety Coaches Podcast for a way out. The Anxiety Coaches Podcast is a relaxing and inspiring show bringing you lifestyle changes to calm your nervous system and help you heal. Heal anxiety, panic, and PTSD for life. We bring you 2 episodes every week. There's no need to walk this path alone. Join us for a relaxing, informative, and inspiring time and start your journey out of anxiety panic. That's anxietycoachespodcast.com. Aloha.
Roxgear, the online webshop of high-end luxury merchandise and products, all featuring original pop art paintings. From La Jolla to Miami to London, www.merch.jamierocks.us.
Man, that's got to be cool. I mean, cool and maybe a little intimidating at the same time. You know, we got to get this right, you know.
It's a balance because you have to land the plane.
Oh, man.
100%. And I can't say that I balanced the neuroses perfectly, but one thing that you have to do is that you always have to bring the fun and the creation in and the fun of creating. And without that, you lose. There's always something lost. And the best sets that I've been on when I'm on sets with more accomplished directors are people that keep a really steady keel, that are relaxed, that you don't feel the pressure of the day. And I've been in productions where we're racing against the clock. We have 5 minutes to shoot one scene, then we have to move on to the next. And not only does that put an extra pressure on the actors, but it puts everyone in kind of a state of chaos. And you're all kind of working under pressure. Now, in some ways, that's good. It forces you. I mean, you really have to learn to be on constantly, and it forces you to work fast on your feet. But if, you know, you look at great directors like Warren Beatty, who, when he was directing, he had all the money in the world to throw. He would do 80 takes of some scenes. I think that famous scene at the end of Reds when Jack Nicholson gets off the train and Diane Keaton's there, they did 97 times. So, you know, when you have the budget and you can afford to, work that way, you know, you can shoot a film in 6 months. We didn't. We shot the Andy Baker tape in about a week and a half. And did we have
wow
issues? Absolutely. you know, we had to go back. We had to reshoot some things. We were still relatively new to using the cameras. And for the most part, it's just Dustin and myself helming the cameras. And we had some issues where things were out of focus, or they were blurry and this. And our goal in the final product is to take the noise away. And you're just seeing the fun and you're seeing the journey that these guys go on together. But the last few nights on the Andy Baker tape were truly 18-hour nights, shooting everything until about 6 and 7 in the morning to get the shots that we needed and move on. And at the end of the day, you just have to service the project. So we committed, we buckled down, and we said, we're going to get this done for the project that we're working on.
That's amazing. Well, you know, and you got to – fortunately, you had been on sets and stuff before where you kind of knew, well, this could happen. You know, I mean, we got to do
yeah.
it. But still. So you get it done. Now, here's the thing. You get – this is something I discovered since I started doing the podcast. Been doing a podcast, I don't know, 8 years now or something. It's something crazy. I didn't plan on that.
Wow.
I planned on like 10 episodes. I figured my friend kind of talked me into it. And I thought, I'll do a couple of these and, I'll find something else to do. And, here we are. But anyway,
that's a great accomplishment on its own. You should be proud, man. That's 8 years is huge.
Oh, yeah. Well, it keeps me out of the bars, right? No. I really enjoy it. I tell you, one of the cool things about the podcast that I really have found is a couple times a week I get to meet and talk to people like yourself who are doing cool shit and just really inspired. Because sometimes I'll wake up in the morning and I'm like, I don't even want to get out of bed, man. I don't know if I'm fighting depression or whatever it is, but I'm like, man, I don't want to do it today. And then I think to myself, well, Brett's out there. He's, he's buying $40 moisturizer cream. I better get on it so I can, keep that. That's just very inspiring. But anyway, one of the things I learned is I'm a civilian. I'm not in the picture business, slightly in entertainment on a way side of the stage type deal, selling to people in that business, a lot of art and whatnot. But one of the things I learned is before I would put on TV. I would put on a show, Law and Order or something, whatever. And I'm like, they filmed this last week. They did a pretty good job of it, I thought it rained last week. Why isn't it raining in the show, I didn't realize that movie time is completely different than the time I'm used to as a civilian out here. And I also learned that sometimes these films, you make them, and okay, we shot it, done deal, let's all buy a boat. No, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
Then you got to get distribution and take it out to festivals and all this kind of stuff. And, after editing it, after putting it together, it was just a given, I guess. But, this could be a long process, a very involved
process. Yeah, I found, you touched on some great points there. This, because it was the pandemic, and because it was my project and I just wanted something, I really invested every single day in doing what I could to get this up on its feet. I think it was a 6-month process from start to finish when we started the script and when that's extremely quick. Now, it definitely helped that we shot the film found footage. If I was shooting like a true narrative feature film, as if we were shooting Dune, there's no way we could have done that in 6 months. Those are major undertakings where the scenes are much more complicated to edit and get those up and running. But I spent every day editing this around the clock because I cared about the project and it was enjoyable to me. It actually left me feeling extremely fulfilled. And we got a final cut of the film in January 2021, it was January 13th, I remember exactly. And when I finished, I was with my producer, Caitlin Bork, and we just said, if we get this into one film festival, I just want people to possibly get it. I knew that I got it. We didn't know how it was going to be received. And we ended up playing 26 pretty major film festivals last year, and we ended up walking away with 26 major awards. And that's not something that I'm saying to brag about.
It's just it's so unexpected at the reception that we had from this film and the way that people took it. And I'm so grateful that the work that we put into this paid off. I've been part of some films, though. You know, I shot a film in 2016 in Nantucket. You know, I was there for 3 months, and that didn't come out till 2020. It was a 4-year process in between shooting and editing the film. And that's the, I mean, that's not uncommon in the indie film world where, you know, a director doesn't have a studio bearing down saying we have to get this product out, we have to do this. So the directors can sit with the project, really shape the story and the exact narrative that they want to tell and put that out there. I think that we just wanted to get something up and running so quickly with this that we had I had the adrenaline behind us and we were just pumping, and we were very organized shooting this, and we knew, you know, we rehearsed a lot going into it. So when we got to set, we basically understood the acting of it. It was just it was adapting the blocking to very specific locations. We would show up and they'd actually be real live working locations. The restaurants are all operating right then. They had no idea that we were shooting. We were doing this guerrilla style. We would show up at some of these hotels and we would adapt the blocking to, but we knew, you know, relatively A to B to C of where we were going to go. And then of course, in the freedom of the moment of acting, things change and the scene becomes what it's eventually going to become. But if you don't show up prepared for some of those things, you're going to be up Schitt's Creek. Also, you know, one of the reasons why we were able to shoot this as quickly as we were is because we could use what's called practical lighting. And practical lighting is when you are just using what's in the room, for instance, like a lamp or an overhead light. And that's what separates found footage from a movie like Dune, where you have, you know, a master cinematographer lighting the film in such a cinematic way. And that's what really takes time on sets. It's not the shooting, it's setting up the lighting in the right way. I did an episode of The Good Wife. And on The Good Wife, I was in a courtroom scene. And they shoot the courtroom scene from the front, from the left, from the right, and from the back. And each time they do that, they break down the walls and they set up lights on the on all the sides to light the characters perfectly. Those days that we shot the courtroom scenes, every single day we hit what's called golden hours, which is a producer's nightmare, which means we were working 16-hour days, and the overtime pay we got was so much because it takes so long to set up those shots. And we didn't have to deal with the same caliber of lighting because we were doing a found footage film. That's one of the main reasons why I think people choose that medium and choose that genre. Number one, it's budget-friendly. Number two, you don't have to have the same level of technical skill as if you're shooting, you know, a true narrative, you know, if you're shooting like a true feature. But you can also do it very self-contained. And it was the pandemic. We couldn't have a sound team with us. We couldn't have a cinematographer. You know, we had to do this ourselves. And that was the best vehicle we could find for the story and a way to get the project up really quickly.
Well, so that means that you always see, like, in photo shoot pictures and stuff, some guy or gal holding one of those big reflector, I don't know what they're called, but it looks like something you put in your car so the sun doesn't trash your dad. So none of that. There was none of that. There was nobody walking around doing light.
Well, in the end of the film, I don't want to give anything away, but when we're doing some of the finale, you know, we do have a third hand on the camera, and we needed someone else. So while they weren't holding reflectors, we did have another person in there very strategically helping us with the camera, hiding under a car seat, holding a camera up, making sure that we had our angles right, checking the gate that way. We didn't have anyone really helping us get lights up. We had a few extra lights that we tucked in some locations just to illuminate scenes, but it's not done in a theatrical way. It's just to make sure that there's enough light on the characters' faces and it still looks like it's being shot, you know, as true to life as possible.
And now, folks, a couple quick messages from some of our show sponsors. Stay tuned. We'll be back with the rest of the interview after these quick messages. Listen to this cool episode ad-free. If you're a VIP member, you can become one on my website, www.jamierocks.us, www.jamierocks.us.
Hey, rockers. This is Stacey Lane Wilson, author and editor of the Rock and Roll Nightmares book series. I have a new podcast that features interviews with musicians, artists, authors, filmmakers, and music historians. In season one, I interview Phil Soussan from Ozzy Osbourne's band, Scott Crawford, the director of the Cream magazine documentary, Lisa S. Johnson, the award-winning author and photographer of the books 108 Rockstar Guitars and Immortal Axes, just to name a few. The Rock and Roll Nightmares podcast explores the dark and mysterious and sometimes funny side of music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. Enjoy on RSS or anywhere you like to listen to podcasts.
Glittering amethyst, energizing citrine, colorful fluorite, the other side of the sun, Earth's treasures brought to light. Since 1999, we have offered a unique collection of hand-selected minerals and gems for every budget, for novices, collectors, and healers. Visit www.tosots.com to view our wide selection of offerings and use coupon code ROCKS, that's R-O-X-X, for 10% off your first order. Remember, TOSOTS.com, Earth's treasures brought to light.
Hi, folks. Jamie Rocks here. Hey, if you're a big fan of cool historical books like me, then you're going to want to check out our newest show sponsor, Michelle Albion, a fantastic author. She's got some really interesting, cool books out that you're going to want to check out. I'm a big fan of all of these. The Florida Life of Thomas Edison, The Quotable Edison, Quotable Henry Ford, Quotable Eleanor Roosevelt, and, of course, The Quotable Amelia Earhart. Michelle's just very keen and very, very cool, and these are just very cool books. So check out her website. There's links to where you can pick these up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble all over the place. MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com, MichelleAlbion.com. Very, very cool stuff. Check it out, folks. Oh, that's amazing. That is amazing. Well, you know, I've read somewhere, I think it was on your IMDb page or the movie's IMDb page. And folks, we have links. I just want to let everybody know. We've got links. We've got links to BrettLotta.net. Your website and also the Andy Baker tape, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter accounts and whatnot. And I want those links, when we convert this to a podcast, those links stay active. So if you're listening to this on Spotify
right.
in the future, you know, hello from the past, click on that link. It'll get you right there. And like and share. Help get the word out. Because chances are, if you like something, your friends are going to dig it too. But one of the things I read somewhere that you guys had the cops called on you a couple times? People didn't know what the hell was going on or something? What's that about?
We did, you know. So, like I said, you know, we shot really in live locations, and we kind of just pulled up. We shot this one scene. You saw the film. It's when Jeff and Andy are kind of arguing outside of a warehouse, and it's when Andy's calling he's supposed to be down in Maryland to work on someone's car. And they tell him that,
right.
No, you can't, you're not going to work on the car today. And they're screaming outside. So we did that about 15 times. And two police officers show up. And they're like, what's going on, guys? We're getting a lot of complaints. We see you two fighting. What's going on? And we said, no, we're actually shooting a New Jersey version of the Blair Witch Project. And the police officers got so excited when they heard that. They're like, this is great. We're going to tell everyone, don't worry. Keep doing what you're doing. This is great. You know, and we eventually kind of had people on the streets watching what we were doing. We had kind of like a mini fan club. It was like at the end of Dog Day Afternoon, people screaming Attica at us, you know. We had actually another scene when we're doing some of the food blogging and we're shooting outside of in the beginning, we're shooting outside this great turkey farm that I love going to. And we got about $150 worth of food. The sun's going down and we have to shoot this scene. Now we're using shotgun mics the entire time. Shotgun mics are an on-camera mic and we use those to mimic the fact that we are shooting on a camcorder. We wanted this to be as true to life as possible. We didn't realize this, but New Jersey's becoming infested with 5G towers. So the frequency from 5G towers just slices through the audio and makes this terrible zzz noise, and it was ruining our audio. So we have all this food. We're like, how are we going to get this shot done? And we ended up finding a dumpster. We flipped the dumpster on its side. We tucked the camera in there, and we wrapped all this copper wire around the camera body, which basically made this makeshift Faraday cage. It blocked the frequency. Then the owner of the farm sees what we're doing, gets in his pickup, drives over, and goes, what is going on here? We said, oh, you know, we're shooting some YouTube videos. We're just trying to get this food blogging done. I said, I grew up right down the street. I'm from Point Beach High School. He goes, Point Beach High School, did you know so-and-so? I said, yeah, they were a year older than me. And it's true, they were. They were a year older than me. He goes, that's my nephew. I said, oh, yeah, I know his brother really well. You know, I knew both of them. He goes, all right. Don't put our name in the film. Stay shooting. Just put the dumpster back on its side when you're finished. And we did. So, you know, I think people saw that we were doing a passion project, and they got behind the fact that we weren't causing, you know, we weren't really causing any trouble. We weren't causing any damage. They didn't really understand what we were doing, but we, you know, we just kind of had to go with that. And we didn't, you know, we didn't get location allowances. We don't show any names in the film, so we can kind of get around that. The only place we do show is this bagel restaurant called Oh What a Bagel, which is in Bayville, New Jersey. And the owner, Michelle, was so great to us. And she saw that we were shooting outside the bagel store. And she goes, what are you guys doing? We told her. She goes, you know what? Do whatever you want. Use the store. Use the front. Walk in and out. I don't care. I think this is great. So, you know, we were able to get people on our side and really just enjoy what we were doing.
That's awesome. That is fantastic. Well, and I see that you're not up to no good. You're not stealing catalytic converters out there or something. You know, you're not doing anything crazy, you know. And people were pretty cool.
One of the scenes that we shot is the final, you know, the final hotel scene that the two guys are at, where it's really kind of the turning point in the film where, you know, not to give anything away, but there's a chase around the parking lot. So when we were trying to find that location, there's a row of hotels that's outside Atlantic City that goes on. I forget the road, but there's about 15 or 20 hotels. Now, that's where everyone goes when they're leaving Atlantic City to do whatever they're going to do, if you catch my drift. You know, there's probably a lot of drugs going on there, a lot of, you know, guys picking up women, vice versa. And we could get those hotels, number one, for $40, but number two, we drove past the location for that, and there was such a lit parking lot with LED lights because they were trying to keep people from, you know, I guess not loitering and doing drugs in the parking lot. So like, this is perfect for this thing. Now we're running around. I'm running around in just a towel around that parking lot, half naked in the movie. We were probably the most inconspicuous people there, you know, and we had people coming out of the hotel rooms, watching over the balcony, watching us kind of run around and do this. No one knew what the hell that we were doing, but we were probably, you know, the least illegal event going on there that night.
Right. Oh, man. Crazy. What's a great movie. No, it dropped. The movie, it's not out yet, right? It comes out the 29th or something?
No, it is actually. We had an early release through Terror Films. They put us on their YouTube channel on the 5th. We just had a wide release on the 12th where we're playing from – we're on Apple TV, we're on Amazon, we're on Tubi, we're on Google Play, we're on Microsoft Movies, YouTube Movies. And then this Friday we have another premiere on Kings of Horror channel, which is a huge horror channel, which we'll get – and then we have more coming down the road. I know that we just got picked up by Roku that'll be in 2023, and, you know, we'll get some more platforms as the rollout happens.
No, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's one of the cool things with all this streaming, and one of the silver – and I'm not making light of the pandemic, ladies and gentlemen. Don't send me emails. A lot of people got sick. A lot of people died, and it's very tragic and whatnot. But I always try to find a silver lining, and one of the silver linings is in the entertainment business – is everyone knows how to stream now. There's nobody, I don't know how to work the Roku. Everybody's very aware how to, you know, play a movie from their PlayStation on the TV. And, you know, it's great. How is that? Let me ask you from a business point of view, because to me it would seem, oh, that's great. There's all this stream, you know, they probably need a lot of product, you know. That's a very simplistic view, I'm sure. How is it navigating those waters with all these streaming channels? Is it difficult? Is it
to be honest?
You got to know what you're doing.
It's my first time delving into this. We have a distributor. We were picked up by Terror Films, and they've done a great job of pushing this out there. I will, you know, we won't find out for the next few months how we're doing. I know that we have about 10,000 views on one channel in about a week, which for a smaller indie film without a studio PR, I'm thrilled with that. I'm getting a lot of, you know, we have a lot of positive reviews, and we have IMDb, where I have Letterboxd, and we, you know, I'm part of these horror and found footage groups on Facebook that have 60 to 70,000 members in there, and there's a lot of buzz about new horror and found footage films. So we have a lot of people talking about us in these platforms. They don't know that I'm the director, so I'm able to see the comments. For the most part, it's all super positive things. We have some people that, you know, that of course with any kind of art form don't like the film.
Right.
And that's okay, you know. And it's also interesting to me for me to see both sides of the coin of what people latch on to, what people say that they don't like. And when we set out to make this movie, we never truly wanted to make this. It was never really a horror film. We wanted to make this kind of dark comedy relationship drama that takes a turn, and we are being billed as a horror film. So diehard fans of the horror genre, you know, if you're expecting,
they're like, why isn't that guy
film,
spleen exploding? Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're not going to be a blood horror, body horror kind of film. That's just not what we wanted to get on camera. The people that understand what we were going for love it. And I'm grateful for the reception, but it's also a lesson to see that fans of this genre, how passionate they are, what they want, and moving forward for my next projects, I can take note from, you know, from the comments that I'm getting, positive or negative. And at the end of the day, these projects are all mud on the wall, and you get things up and running, and they're all learning experiences. You know, like the Andy Baker tape, as much as I love this, this is not the end-all, be-all for me. This was my first feature film. So with that comes a major learning curve. I had a great learning experience with this. I was able to put something out there that I'm truly proud of, and we busted our humps to get this up and running. But hopefully I've grown from this process. I've learned more about storytelling. I've learned more about creating, and I can only take those lessons and move forward in a more positive way.
Absolutely. Well, I will say this. I will say this for all the guys out there that are, you know, diehard horror splatter, you know, guys and whatnot. That's great. And the reality is, I know when you put one of those movies on, for about 90% of you, your wives and girlfriends go, oh, great, here we go again. I'm telling you, every girl I know, and I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, I'm just saying, it seems to me they all love these murder, crazy psycho movies and shows. You know, every girl I know watches these,
it's true. My,
you know?
My girlfriend's the same way. She like, they love, you know, these, I don't know why these documentaries or, like, these shows are so popular. I actually did a few when I was first starting off in my career, a few of these horror these murder reenactment shows.
Right.
First one I did was the show called Deadly Sins, and I played a true character, Craig Rabinowitz, who was this Westchester Wall Street broker who killed his wife for her life insurance policy and, you know, married or tried to marry a stripper afterwards. And he was a real character, and I played Craig in it. And then I did this amazing show on Lifetime. It was Lifetime's first scripted show called I Love You But I Lied. And it was so popular, and they were true stories that were told.
Oh, they eat it up.
Adapted. Yeah,
they
and
love
the
it.
Director
love
of
it.
This, the director of it is this great guy, Michael Selvidge, who was the showrunner for that show, Catfish. So he basically took that formula, brought it into narrative TV. And honestly, I'd say that's where the idea for the Andy Baker tape almost got birthed. And I saw that how easy it is to shoot a project in this pseudo-mockumentary, documentary way and do it on a tight budget.
Oh, I'm telling you, when it's my – we take turns, kind of. It's not anything written in stone or anything, but, you know, I'll have my night where we're watching, you know, Prey or something, although my wife did love that. She's never seen a Predator movie. That started her out. I think she's a Predator fan.
Wow.
But, you know, then it'll be her night, and it'll be, you know, if I can get her off The Handmaid's Tale or something – that's just so depressing to me. You know, it's a murder show. So we're watching some, you know, this kid's, you know, been in prison his whole life. Can he get out on parole? You know, something, or this man messed around in his wife and she ran over him with a car. It's something I know we're going to be watching. And they eat it up. I'm saying for those guys out there, that the splatter guys, when it's the Mrs. Night on the TV, you put this on because this is a cool thriller. You got to... The guy is creepy. Everybody just – the acting in this, including yourself, Brett, is phenomenal. And the ladies are going to love this. I'm telling you, because it's pretty creepy. Old Andy is creepy.
Yeah, you know, like we – you know, Dustin obviously does such a great job as Andy. And he brought such a lighthearted vulnerability to that. And you know, we did do a lot of research on these characters. We certainly watched a lot of found footage. We tried to see what worked. We tried to see what didn't. We didn't want this to be your average shaky cam, jump scare. You know, we're going to torture you with going into a dark room and you're not going to know when someone's going to jump out of you. But we did, you know, we saw what worked. We saw what didn't. Dustin just naturally brings a really good, playful energy to this character, which was not what I originally anticipated when we scripted this out and we wrote this. And I'm so glad that he brings that lightheartedness, because these guys really are supposed to be the yin and yang of each other. You know, they're the polar opposites in some ways, but they fill the voids. You know, they fill each other's voids. And I've known Dustin for years, and to work opposite him as an actor, you know, we're really just drawing on our friendship and our years of history and chemistry, and we're able to bring that through onto the screen together.
No, it works. It works. And I don't want to give anything away. I want everybody to watch it. I've watched it a couple times. This film is phenomenal. There is one of the stills. We have a player that plays on our show page, and it's one of the stills in there. It's one of the stills you guys released, you know, as your press stuff.
Yes.
You know, the scene with him in the doorway. Oh, man, that is a creepy shot. That is a painting, man.
Yeah.
That sells it. I'm like, oh man. My wife saw that.
You know,
she's like,
wasn't planned. You know, we had a different idea for that scene And then when we were shooting it, I looked at the framing and I was like, you know what? I think we could pull this off. And originally it was the character running outside with the camera and trying to see who was outside. And the way that shot came out is so much more effective. And it just shows to really be open to what's around you. And really, you know, if we had this set rigid idea of like, we have to shoot it this way, we have to do this, we would have never stumbled into some of the mistakes and accidents that we got from doing this. And that's just another lesson to where you kind of, you have to leave yourself open to the possibilities of what something can be as opposed to what you want to make it.
No, that's great advice. That's great advice for any artistic project, you know? And maybe, you know, if you're making muffins, maybe you put a cup and a half of sugar in there, you know, instead of a cup.
Yeah.
Might work.
Yeah.
Might not. Might not, but you got to try. Oh, that's phenomenal. Let me ask you this. Now, Brett, I know how you Hollywood types can be. You know, you're just very busy going to lunches all the time, partying with models at night, the whole bit. I'm kidding, of course. But I do know that when it comes to talking about future projects, sometimes you can talk about it, sometimes you can't, you know, until T's are crossed and I's dotted and all that. Do you have something in the hopper for the next project that you can share? Or is everything kind of hush-hush right now?
I just shot this fun horror film around L.A. a few months ago called Bad Connection. I have a great little fun part in that I shot, and I'm excited for that to come out. I have been workshopping two separate scripts, and I'm certainly on my sophomore project with getting out one of these. I'm working on this dark relationship drama right now. It's a horror, you know. It's basically Get Out meets Five Easy Pieces. So I'm in the middle of putting that together right now. I got a little bit sidetracked with the distribution of Andy, and you know, I actually moved to LA from New York in January of this year. So when you're moving to a new city, that doesn't come without some ups and downs and, you know, a little bit of a learning curve of getting used to the new city. And I was a little bit sidetracked, but truly, like, my dad just called me the other day. And he's really excited about all the stuff with Andy. He's like, what are you working on now? What do you got going on? Like, what are you working on?
Nice.
Like that. So I'm getting some pressure from the people around me to get stuff up and running, which is good. And it's true. Like, I now that I've let Andy out into the wild and I don't have to hold its hand anymore through this process, I can kind of dial myself back in and really focus on what's next and let Andy speak for itself, and I don't have to shepherd him anymore through this through the distribution process.
No, that's amazing. Well, it's cool, you know. Sometimes you need a little fire set under you, you know. I mean, I've been there, and
yeah.
You know. But at the same time, too, sometimes you got to. I call it recharging your battery. I have a big.
Yeah.
I do all kinds of crazy shit. All of my old cool friends are like, "What the hell are you doing? You have a garden now? You used to be the king of the club. What's wrong with you?" You know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm old now. I can't go to clubs. I'm married. But anyway, I reset my battery, I say. You know, I go out, I work in the garden, I you know, mow the grass or something, you know, do all this kind of stuff my dad used to do. But it resets it, and then I can sit down and be creative, and my mind's fresh, and things work a lot better, for me at least.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to do that. How are you liking, you've worked out in L.A. before, but living out there, kind of different, way different than Jersey. How are you digging that?
You know,
did you bring your neighbor?
I think there's like pros and cons to being out in LA. You know, it's definitely more of an isolating feeling than being in New York, where New York,
right.
I can walk out my apartment and walk down the street and see 10 people that I know. I could run into any kind of pub or bar or see someone that I know, you know, and I can just bump into people. Where here, you really have to make plans to see someone, you know. There, you know, I'm in Studio City. I got friends in Santa Monica. It's about a 23-minute drive without traffic, and with LA traffic, it's about 4 hours. You know, so
right.
you have to
you have to adjust to that pace of living. And I notice food's more expensive here in general. Like in New York, I'm really good at knowing all the little hole-in-the-wall spots where I could go in, get a great, quick, cheap lunch, and spend, you know, $10 tops. Here, I went the other day out for, I got pancakes, eggs, and bacon, and a pot of coffee at a no-frill spot, and it cost me $35 with a tip. Now, that's crazy.
Wow.
You know, for pancakes, eggs, and bacon costing $35. But I just wanted to treat myself to a breakfast. I will not be doing that a lot. You know, now, I have found these good hole-in-the-wall spots that I do like. I really miss great bagels growing up at the Jersey Shore in New York, a great bacon, egg, and cheese. I just miss that, man. Where here, everything is street tacos, and the Mexican food is great, but it's a lot of street tacos and burritos, where in New York they have the halal carts where you're getting chicken over rice or things like that. The people out here, it's a different breed, you know, and I'm not saying that it's good or bad, but the way that I feel like LA is more optics versus substance, you know, where everything is, I'm going to drive this car, I'm going to do this, I'm going to put on this image, I'm going to wear these clothes, to where coming from the East Coast, things are a little bit more understated, and it's cooler to not show as much, if that makes sense. And you see that everyone here is really good at showing that, like, they have this, you know, they have this.
Right.
That's part of just the LA culture. Now, I just did this road. I was really, you know, you said you were sick a few weeks ago. I think I caught the same thing. It wasn't COVID, but I went to a wedding in Lake Tahoe. I drove up there. The second I got there, I got the worst fever, chills, everything you could imagine.
Yep.
I was confined to a hotel room for 2 days.
I left
the wedding. Yeah, it was horrible. I left the wedding, and I was like, you know, I don't want to feel like this trip was all for naught. So I drove west, and I drove to Monterey. I was feeling a little bit better, so I did the Monterey Bay Aquarium that day. I drove around Pebble Beach. I drove around Carmel, and I love Northern California. I love the topography.
Yeah.
I love the way the sun kind of hits it, where it's a little bit more melancholy. It's not as hustle and bustle as LA, but I mean, just the kelp forest. When you're looking out into like Monterey Bay, and there's the kelp gardens, it's just beautiful. You know, it's a different.
Oh, absolutely.
The Pacific Northwest, I think, might be one of the most beautiful places in the United States. And then I drove down to, like, San Luis Obispo and you know, did San Luis Obispo for a day. And San Luis Obispo, too. I mean, these are these beautiful old missionary towns that are now kind of turned into these kind of, you know, hippie-ish, fun, artsy towns that you can walk around. And it felt great. You know, I'm kind of happy that I'm not in the main congestion of L.A. I'm a little bit away from, like, the West Hollywood crowd. I'm in Studio City, which feels kind of like a nice little neighborhood. I do have a lot of local restaurants. I do have this great art house movie theater down the road. There's this place I go to called Republic of Pie, and they're just known for doing great pies. And I go there, I get a cherry pie and a cup of coffee, and it's just a relaxing afternoon. I like that feel. I like the intimacy as opposed to the escaping city that LA is, because it's monstrous. It really is. And I'm not part of, you know, like the nightlife scene here that much. I'm not a huge, you know, I've never really been like a huge clubber or kind of a nightlife guy.
Mm.
So that doesn't appeal to me. I would rather go to a nice dinner and sit down and, you know, have a three course meal and talk to friends. So I still feel like
not
I'm
yell.
Finding my way. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I still feel like I'm finding my way here. I certainly have learned a lot from being in this city. I think it's no matter what, it's great to throw yourself into new situations and see what that pulls out of you. And I am along for the ride.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like a good thing. I always found the East Coast, the West Coast people are very good at branding. They're very aware
yes.
of branding. The East Coast people are like, branding? This is who I am. They are their brand. You know what I mean? They don't
yes.
even think about it.
Yes.
The one thing,
people on the West Coast, I feel, are much better, and this isn't me giving a jab, are better at
right.
talking about themselves, and they're not sheepish, where if you're from the tri-state area, I'm going to use profanity now. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone in North Jersey, New York, whatever, if you are being too extroverted about yourself, everyone says, shut the fuck up, you know? And no
exactly.
one on the West Coast, no
we'll
one on the West Coast
that.
Does that. Yes, nobody
right.
does that. No one is walking down the street, you know, and you have all these influencers. And, like, if you were doing that around New York, everyone would just be like, get the fuck out of my way, you know? And that's
exactly.
what you don't see out here. So you have no one telling you. You might be being a little bit ridiculous. And that gives people, I feel like, a certain level of freedom to embrace this, hey, this is me, I'm putting myself out there way, where, like I said, going back to clothing and branding, the style, like, street style in L.A. is very much in your face. It's very much, like, bright, almost like
oh, yeah.
pastel-y colors right now, name branding, where, like, the more popular brands and styles in New York, it's all muted colors. It's sleek. It's slate tones. It's gray. It's just more about blending in and looking sophisticated as opposed to really putting yourself
right.
out there in a adventurous way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's just, that's how it is, you know. But I agree with you on Northern California. I'm telling you, I live in South Florida. It's hot. It's humid like crazy. Every day I'm walking my dog in the summer, you know, and I have conversations with my dog. I'm like, God damn it, if it wasn't for your mama, I'd be living in San Francisco right now. What the hell's wrong with
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
I'm sick of this heat.
Where are you in South Florida?
Up from Fort Lauderdale, Miami, a little beach town called Deer Park.
I grew up in the
yeah.
Florida Keys.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I spent
north of that.
I spent tons of time in like Hollywood, Florida. You know, I used to be a competitive
oh, yeah.
swimmer, so I was always at the Swimming Hall of Fame in Fort Lauderdale. I love it down there, but you're right, the humidity
oh, yeah.
is brutal.
Oh, I'm telling you, especially, you know, I'm not a sleek, you know, feline actor. I'm more of a chunky monkey, and man, it's hard in the summer here. It is hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's the way it is. Eat an apple, Jamie. What's wrong with you? You want to. I tell you, after being sick, man, I think I lost about 15 pounds that week just being sick. I couldn't eat anything. I was just, terrible. Terrible.
My father just had COVID. My dad's going to all the food places that I went to in Andy Baker's eating food right now because he said that he's, you know, he lost about 15 pounds. He just had COVID.
Right.
So that's the one silver lining of getting these viruses, I guess.
I guess. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you. I'll tell you what. It was funny. We ever since I got better from being sick, that mask has been back on. I don't see anything wrong with the mask. Everybody was bitching down here about the mask. So I'm like, I don't have to shave today. Great. Give me that mask. Fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's another 5 minutes of my day I just earned back. I have. And the whole social distance, not a problem. Not a problem. You're standing too close to me.
Well, to be honest, in New York, you're forced to be on top of people so much. You're on the subway. Like, I don't know how they're
right.
going to keep those subways. You know, like, but
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've been on a train and you are so pushed up against 1,000 other people, you know, so
right.
keeping 6 feet apart is not a problem for me. And especially in Southern California, you at least have the openness and, you know, I've actually never, tomorrow night I have to go from my apartment and I'm going to the Holly Shorts Film Festival, which is a great short
okay.
film festival. And it's going to be the first time, because I don't feel like it's at the TCL Grumman's Theater. I don't have to.
Nice.
If you park down there, it's like $45. But I can actually take the
right.
subway for the first time right from my apartment down there. So I'm curious to see the L.A. subway experience.
Yeah, I've never been on the L.A. subway. I lived in Southern California for years before I even heard there was one. I had no idea. No idea.
Yeah.
And I'm like, God, that's a good idea. They need one. I've driven on four on the 101.
New York would be crippled.
Jesus.
New York would absolutely be crippled without one. So I know. I mean, there's talks of building one that's going to go out to Santa Monica, but I think the people of Santa Monica don't want that. They don't want the tourism coming from, you know, the rest of L.A. to get out to the beach. They like being excluded out there.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. And people, you know, they're used to what they are growing up. My wife, Floridian, you know, her and her sisters all born and raised here. And, you know, and kind of, you know, upper middle class. And they that's how they grew up. And, you know, they kind of turned their nose up at buses a little bit, the whole concept.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, we go to Disney World. They know that bus schedule like a German knows the metro schedule. I'm amazed.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, no, the bus will be here in 3 minutes and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, so the buses aren't so bad,
yeah,
are
Disney,
they?
Disney, the Disney fanatics, it's a different world. You know, my cousin takes her kids to Disney 3 times a year. I finally just went to Disney. I went to Disney World in Florida as a kid, but I just went to the one in Anaheim for the first time. And,
I thought it was going to be like a state fair or something the first time I went. And I was, you know what? I showed up, we went to the resort, we stayed at the resort, and they're like, oh, right this way, Mr. Rocks. And they're, you know, carrying my bag and all that. And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'm a Disney fan now. Sign me up. $20 a hamburger? Not a problem. Let's do it.
Yeah, that was my that was my biggest complaint was we got, you know, my friend works for Hulu, and she's like, I have 2 tickets for Disney to go if you just want to go. I said, sure, we'll do that. Now, even with going to Disney with the free pass, we had a great time, don't get me wrong. But if you really want to see the rides the right way and get on and off, you have to get the fast pass. So I went with my girlfriend. We paid the $20 each for the fast pass. And then if you want to do the Star Wars ride, which is the reason why most people go, you know, it's amazing, but you have to pay another $20 to get on that. So we did that. And then with, you know, we were in Star Wars land, and we were starving. We have to get something to eat. So they have this thing called the Ronto Wrap. It's, you know, based off Star Wars lore. It says it's a sausage.
Right.
It's a great pork sausage. 2 fillets of pork on top, you know, coleslaw, whatever. I'm like, all right, this sounds good. It was a hot dog on a pita, and it cost us $43 for the 2 of those. And I was like, I was so mad. I said, you know, Caitlin, we're not doing this again. We were joking about it the entire day.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny. Yeah, it happens, man. It happens. We, you know, that's how I knew the pandemic was serious. Me and my wife been together. We've been a couple for you know, a decade, but years and years and years. We finally, her Italian mama beat us down and said, no, you guys need to get married. You already got a house. You got a dog. You got to get married. So, you know, we got married.
Sorry.
And, you know, we kind of did it backwards, but no kids yet. No kids. But, you know, we didn't go on a honeymoon because we can't take the time to do that. But, you know, we got Disney passes. We can go anytime we want to. We said, let's go up to Disney for a couple of days after all the bullshit of the wedding, you know, all the stress of that. And so we're sitting in this fancy restaurant, one of these Japanese steakhouse, you know, where they cut up the onion and make a volcano on your table and all that. So we're sitting there, we're eating, and I don't use a cell phone, not because I'm cool or anything, it's just because I'm cheap. My wife has one. What the hell do I need to pay for one for? You know, I got a voicemail. And, so we're sitting there at dinner, and everybody's phones, it looked like a movie. Everybody's phones were going off. And I kind of motioned over to my wife. I'm like, what the hell's going on? You know, are the missiles flying? What's happening? She's like, Disney just announced they're closing the parks. And I'm like, Disney's giving up on $45 hamburgers? This is serious. If Disney's walking away from that kind of money, we got to get the hell out of here. And so we did. Came home. But that's how I knew.
And that
Disney
was right.
Does not
that
go
was,
away.
March 15th of 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. We were married like 6 weeks or 6 days or something like that. Yeah, it was crazy.
I went with a friend, one of the famous pizza places in New York is John DeBleeker. I love it.
Right.
I was at John DeBleeker with my friend, and then I left and That's when the new Ben Affleck movie came out, The Way Back, and it's directed by Gavin O'Connor. I was so desperate to go see that movie. I really like Gavin O'Connor. He directed that movie Warrior 2. I thought Warrior was just a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I ran from the pizza place to get to the movie theater, and it was like 8:05, and I had the AMC Stubbs pass. And because I got there after 8, I couldn't use my Stubbs pass to see the movie, and I wasn't able to see it. So I took the subway home in defeat. I think this was March 15th. The next day was Monday, March 16th, and I woke up to the world being shut down.
Yeah. It was crazy because nobody knew, you know. I didn't see it coming. And matter of fact, at our wedding, one of my best friends came to the wedding, this girl I was high school with, her and her husband, her and her daughter, I should say. And, you know, we were kind of joking. There were some people at the wedding reception that were real, you know, serious and real worried. And we were kind of behind their back. We were being very cavalier, kind of joking around about the whole thing. And a week later, man, I'm doing patrols around my property with the machete and my dog. You know, worrying about the mutant, Mad Max mutants coming to take my toilet paper.
Well, I was in New York. I remember going to
Ground Zero.
I'm not exaggerating. You saw people wearing scuba tanks in the grocery store. You saw people fully saran wrapped. You know, you thought it was War of the Worlds, and there was a gas cloud coming through. You know, truly, nobody knew what was going on. I had a roommate at the time in the city who was in his room watching the news every day. I was watching him kind of go through this, like, manic episode. He went out one day to Trader Joe's. He spent $800 on groceries, filled up the entire refrigerator. And then the next day went home and left all that stuff there. It was just like – it was the Wild West for a little bit. And – you know, I took a subway. Actually, when I got the Grand through SAG, I bought my first camera, and I was so excited to run downtown and get the camera. The only store that was open that wasn't like an emergency grocery store or a hospital was B&H. I don't know how they worked. I mean, I guess I do know how they worked it out. But they stayed open, and I took the subway down to Times Square from my apartment on the Upper West Side. There was not a single person walking around the streets. It was like the movie I Am Legend. I was wearing this special like vest. I had gloves. I had 3 masks on. I didn't know what was going on. I was just trying to stay safe, but I didn't want to wait for the camera to come through from UPS. I wanted to go get it.
Right. Absolutely. Well, I understand, man. I understand. Yeah, it was crazy. It was weird. And I'll tell you, all we saw about New York was on the news down here. And it was crazy. They're like, well, here's another, we have to bring in these cooling tractor trailers, you know, these ice trailers to for the bot. I mean, it was apocalyptic. So, and because, you know, TV kind of sensationalizes stuff. But, you know, I mean, yeah, everybody knows that. But, I mean, I'm like, if this is sensationalized, it's still really bad because this is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy. It was crazy. But I hope all your people, all your tribe and family and everybody came through okay.
Yeah, you know, for the most part, I mean, I did lose some friends during the pandemic, and I had some friends who lost family members. Directly, I was fortunate enough that no one passed away from COVID in my direct family, but I had a 96-year-old grandmother at the time, and I wanted to see her. She was ill, and for a long time, it was this. I was debating with myself. It's like I want to go see her and say hi, but if I were to get her sick, without knowing that I'm sick, you would feel horrible. But I was able to see her, and I lost her that year in November, but she, it was mostly natural causes. Well, she was 96 years old. She lived a long, beautiful life, and I'm just grateful that I was to be part of it. So, you know, I miss her dearly, but she, at 96, you can't really scoff at that, so.
Wow. Crazy. crazy. Well, Brett, oh, man, the hour has went by. It's come and gone. My life's been blinking. But you're fascinating to talk to. I could totally do one of those Joe Rogan three-hour podcasts with you. You're just a fascinating person.
I tell you what, we'll do it one day. We'll sit down and we'll do the whole thing.
That sounds good to me. Very cool. Keep doing what you're doing. You're real good at it. The Andy Baker tape, phenomenal. I want everybody to get out there, watch it. Watch it this week, man. It's you're going to dig it. You're going to dig it. I'm telling you. Just out of the park. Everything about this film. I really, really liked it.
Thank you so much, Brett. I really appreciate that. And I really had a great time talking to you today. So thank you for having me on.
Oh, anytime, man. Anytime. I can't wait till you're on again. Hey, and like I said, keep doing it, man. I love your work. I can't wait to see more. Can't wait to see more.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, and I will. You'll see something from me soon.
Awesome. Well, folks, that's going to wrap it up for us today. It's Mr. Brett Latta, thespian extraordinaire, filmmaker extraordinaire, the Andy Baker tape. You got to see it. As I said, we have links up. We're going to convert this show now to a podcast. That's when we add, we clean any little thing up or whatever, and we add the commercials and all that in. I have a post-it here. If you want to listen to all of my podcasts, we do them a couple times a week, ad-free without the commercials, well, you got to be a VIP. You got to get into the VIP room, man, and you can do that on my site. That's the fancy way of for my Patreon. I want to thank all the patrons. You know, you get all kinds of stuff when you're on the Patreon, but everybody gets is the all the podcasts commercial free. So there's that. Or you can listen to them with the commercials, you know. It's your choice. We appreciate it either way. Very, very cool. We will be back tomorrow. We've got another fantastic filmmaker on tomorrow. New, very funny movie called Movers Ultimate. I watched this movie. I was laughing my ass off. If you've ever dealt with the public, folks, you will like and understand a lot of the humor in the movie tomorrow. Movers Ultimate. That's coming up tomorrow. But today, we're focused on the Andy Baker tape. It's one of my favorites of the year. I'm telling you, you got to see it. Okay, folks, we will see you tomorrow. Have a good one. Hey, and remember, the world still is a little bit of a weird place. Be nice when you're out, okay? If you got to wait a little extra in line or something, or, you know, the waitress spends another minute bringing your cup of coffee to you, you know, it's a crazy world right now. If that's the worst thing happening to you today, you're doing good. So, you know, be nice, keep your patience, and just be cool. How about that? You know, if we're all cool, the world will be a better place. If you look at all the shit that's happening, it's because it's from people who aren't being cool, you know. And, you know, if you're a dictator, don't invade a country. How about that? You know, just be cool. Okay, we'll see you next time. Have a good one, everybody. Bye.
This has been pop art painter Jamie Rocks's Pop Rocks Radio Talk Show. It has been executive produced by Jamie Rocks, recorded at his studio in Deerfield Beach in South Florida. All rights reserved by Pop Rocks Limited for broadcast on Blog Talk Radio.
Tana Oli, Pop Rocks Radio.
Estás escuchando Jamie Rocks de Pop Rocks Radio. Manténganse al tanto.
Hej, det här är Hicks från Sverige och ni lyssnar till Pop Rocks Radio med Jamie Rocks.
Blog Talk Radio.